Hey, do you like the Star Wars? Well, we do too here at the Rancor Pit, and we're not alone, are we, Eddie?
Oh no, we're when it comes to Star Wars, you're never alone. Always two there are, in this case, always four there are.
Now you just confused, you've completely confused the issue. This is the Rancor Pit number 44, the first time ever I saw Star Wars. And in fact, four there are, because we are joined by two esteemed Star Wars guests who like them some Star Wars as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And so. Our first guest is a like Obi-Wan on the plains of Hoth, just sort of appearing in a ghostly form out of the past. David Buns, old friend of mine from back in my youth in Red Oak. And one of the handful of people that helped keep me sane in that, what was in a rather small hick town. So I just lost the entire Red Oak audience.
We actually have some Red Oak listeners, too.
Oh, no.
It was a pleasure to keep you sane.
Thank you very much. David had the good, his family had the good sense to flee Texas.
Flee Texas all the way back to California. Oddly enough, we have more listeners from Red Oak than we do California.
Interesting.
Well, this will change that right away. And coming to us courtesy of a last-minute guest booty call, we have none other than Hunter Dusing of the Midnight Movie Cowboys.
Have you guys seen Star Wars? People tell me I look like Han Solo.
I think it's just that vest you wear.
Yeah.
All the time. The only person I know who wears a vest more often than Hunter is Andy Farmer of Ed's Comics.
Are you sure there was Han Solo and not Ham Salad from
That's exactly who he looks like. Intergalactic wise guy.
Yeah. To throw in a Hardware Wars reference there.
Wow, that is nice. I don't think we've done any of those.
Knight, good pull.
Oh, man, I had forgotten about that. Yeah,
that's about the time that Hunter's going to say 4Q2. The droid from that movie. Don't get upset. But we are here to talk about something you've heard Eddie and I talk about at length many times, and that's why we've insisted on having some guests. We're talking about the first time we ever saw Star Wars. And it ultimately, this is a lead-in to our next episode, which is going to be a compilation episode, where we're going to have interviews with a lot of folks of all different age groups and talk about, you know, where was the first time you saw Star Wars? Was it on the big screen? Was it home video? Was it, you know, VHS, DVD?
Smartphone,
yeah. What was your entree into Star Wars? And, you know, we will probably touch a little bit on ours, but we've talked about that enough that we want someone else to have a voice for a change on this subject.
Yeah, I just want to sit back and listen tonight. I'm on my second glass of wine, and I'm ready just to listen, not talk.
Sure. And that's what happens when we take a few weeks off for the holidays.
That's right.
Is then we keep right on relaxing.
That's right.
So without any further ado, since David, you're coming to us virtually from the greatest distance.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about when did you discover Star Wars? How were you introduced to it?
Well, okay, so the first thing I remember about Star Wars, and some of you may remember this, Cole, you may remember these, those very first television advertisements, and they were very short.
Yes.
There was like a scene of Leia and Luke, swinging across the chasm. There was a shot of Chewie and maybe a few other scenes, and it was maybe just 30 seconds or 20 seconds, and it was very captivating. I remember seeing that as a kid and goes, wow, that looks really different and cool. And I was like, you know, what is that? You know,
understated advertising. It would never fly today.
No, it wouldn't. But
not put out Star Wars, and like you certainly couldn't put out Episode 7 and say, you know, it's the story of a boy, a girl, heroes and villains, and aliens unlike anything on your world. Hey, don't talk to me about my world, mister.
They need to bring back that 70s advertising.
They do.
They do. I've been saying that for years.
And at the end they say, bring your mother, she'll like it.
I remember the impression I got.
It worked for Grindhouse. It could work again.
Exactly. Thanksgiving.
The impression I got, it was like a futuristic movie where Han and Leia are these rebels and they're swinging through this city and they're running away from the bad guys and, you know, something like that. That was my impression.
Yeah, you know, you've got this just these brief glimpses of of something you'd never seen before. So I'm glad you brought that up because the original advertising, and I'll try to be sure and remember to link that to this, was, especially by today's standards, rather lackluster.
Yeah, it was.
But even then, I think that it was because the studio had no faith in it.
Well, it was effective for the time it came out. In that time and era, it was an effective way to advertise, I think. We're seeing it through eyes now, and we forget how dramatic things were, you know, when it was presented to the American public.
That's
true. If you go back and look at the trailer for Die Hard, Die Hard is, to me, is like the quintessential, just like the best action movie out there. But the trailer itself, if you were to watch it now, like, it doesn't look very interesting per se. It looks okay.
In fact, Die Hard was kind of a punchline because they were like,
"Oh yeah,
what, the guy from Moonlighting setting up an action movie? That's stupid."
Yeah. Exactly.
That's true.
That's one of my pet peeves about trailers now is they're too long and they give away too much.
They do.
I blame Robert Zemeckis. He's the guy who's like, the audience, they want to know what they're getting. That's why all of his trailers give you the whole plot. Like, I never saw Castaway because the trailer's the whole movie. You see the plane crashing, you see him on the island, then you see him back in Memphis. I was like, okay.
There you go.
He gets back because he was fatter when he left than when he got home.
You can blame everything on Robert Zemeckis, basically.
Except for episodes 1 through 3.
Well, everybody blames George Lucas for stuff, so I wanted to get somebody from that camp.
That's true.
So anyway, to continue. So then the next thing is in elementary school. There's a kid in my class. He's been to the mountain. He's been to the temple. He's seen it. He's like, oh my God. And, you know, we're like, dude, you know, we're trying to get him to tell us about the movie. So now the problem that I had, right, and a lot of people had this, even executives who Lucas was trying to pitch the movie to when he was trying to get funding, like, well, we're not doing science fiction right now, you know, because I thought it was science fiction, just pure science fiction. And you have to have an Earth reference to understand science fiction. You know, it's the year 1999, the moon has been blown away out of Earth's orbit, and, you know, or whatever kind of reference. So I keep asking the kid, you know, what about Earth? Because he's not talking about Earth. What about Earth? I'm trying to get that reference, and he's not talking about it, and I'm frustrated because I can't understand what he's talking about. So eventually he makes some stupid crap up, like, oh, the Earth is full of, you know, monsters or something. I mean, just to shut me up, you know.
Earth was overtaken by midichlorians.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, have you noticed that, like, about kids, though? Because when I was young, I remember if somebody played a game or saw a movie I wanted to see, they were really evasive about it. They'd be like, I saw it. And you'd be like, well, what about this? What does this do? And they go, well, you know? to mess with you. Like,
because
when you
well, I think it was I, because I that was the one thing you had. If you had seen it and someone else hadn't, that was something you could cling to, and you were better than them. Yeah.
It was like I had this experience. I'm not going to share it with you.
Yeah. And we've gone totally in the opposite direction. Now we don't want anything spoiled.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in the day, we wanted everything spoiled.
So that's what it is. Zemeckis just wanted to make up for his misspent youth begging people for information.
It's like, I always wanted the info. What?
But I like the fact that your experience with Star Wars, David, was so drastically different than my own, because my older brother, a friend of his, had seen it.
Ah.
And it was so undersold. It was just like, it's, you know, he'd seen it. He said there's never a dull moment. Yeah. And, you know, he was right, but it was just so understated. It was like, you know. Well, that was true of the last Samuel Zarkov movie I saw.
Never a dull moment. That can describe it's a mad, 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 mad world, for all we know.
Yeah, that's right. True. From the moment the guy kicks the bucket there on Tatooine, I'm getting too confused.
So I saw the movie. So I don't remember. I remember seeing the movie as far as the opening scene, definitely, because that was like everybody has that memory. You know, you see that, and it's like, oh my god, you know. But the thing that I commented to Cole about this today is the movie was like totally different than anything you'd ever seen. Like I one of the things about blockbusters today, Jurassic World. Okay, fine. We know what Jurassic World's going to be. I knew the movie practically before I saw it. I saw it, you know, and that's fine. It's a cool movie, whatever. It was what I expected. Star Wars was not what I expected. It's not, I knew nothing. It was a really great experience because you got to see this incredible movie that was like just so captivating. Yeah. And so, absorbed, you got absorbed into the story. Just being there at that moment, that was incredible.
Because it was structurally so different.
Yeah.
And the, you know, everything about it, there was so much, the world that was very much alive. It wasn't just the principal characters hanging out. So, Hunter, real quick, let me switch over and we'll kind of jump back and forth a bit, but I want to get what memories you have of your first time.
Well,
We're like, you know, a sleepover. We're telling secrets about our first time.
Ooh, yes. Well,
I feel like
my first time was
like we're in Greece or something.
summer camp. I think I'd seen bits of Star Wars on television, but I remember being at summer camp and at Camp Stewart in Hunt, Texas. And the movie they were showing that week was Star Wars. And they were like, I was like, I don't know what that is. they go, you haven't seen Star Wars? And all the kids were like, you haven't seen Star Wars? And the thing was, is my family did not care about movies at all. Like, so my...
Okay, here's an amazing irony about you as someone who is steeped in film.
I know. I'm kind of like Paul Schrader, not in terms of talent, but in terms of, like, he's more extreme. Like, he didn't see a movie until he was 18.
Okay, I got confused. I thought you were talking about Hank Schrader from Breaking Bad.
No. Paul Schrader, the guy who wrote Taxi Driver. But he was a strict Calvinist and didn't see a movie till he was 18. But no, I saw movies, but like my parents were very strict about what I could see. Like I was not allowed to watch The Simpsons. I was not allowed to watch MTV. I was not allowed to see movies that were.
I like how that illustrates how much younger you are than myself and David.
Right. Yeah, it does.
Because like, people, you like, kidding? I was in college by then.
and I was not allowed to, but I wasn't allowed to see rated R movies. I didn't see PG-13 movies until I was, you know, 13. So my family just didn't care about movies. My family just, you know, for whatever reason, just didn't like them. They weren't, big movie renters. They might occasionally rent, you know, a film every now and then, but it was one I wasn't allowed to see usually, like Last of the Mohicans or something. But, I was at summer camp, and I remember watching it and liking it, but it didn't make an impression on me, probably because I was at summer camp surrounded by a bunch of boys and was more interested, you know, that sounds really gay.
No, I can understand.
I say it, but...
Well, you were thinking, you know, more but, about, like,
you know, when we all went skinny dipping together.
Yeah. No, but, you know, but you're
thinking more about, like, the canoeing and the horseback riding and whatever else they were offering. Archery, you know.
Archery.
When are you going to get to do that again? You can watch movies anytime.
Well, it was just like we'd have these movie nights. I remember getting excited because I got to see Ace Ventura: Pet Detective, which was a movie I would was not allowed to see. So,
it's like when I snuck off, like I was got out of school early one time during finals, and I was done for the day, and I snuck off and watched Porky's. I saw Porky's because I didn't think my mom would ever approve of that. And years later, I kid you not, it became one of her favorite movies of all time.
So it didn't make an impression. And I think it was just because I was more interested in hanging out with, you know, friends and stuff.
Absolutely.
It wasn't.
It was the surroundings because, you know, the movie nights is just an another thing, you know.
Yeah, but
you
I
had
do
arts
remember
and crafts
sitting,
in the morning.
I do remember sitting in that gymnasium though and seeing C-3PO and R2-D2, and I remember thinking, I've seen these robots before. That's why I was thinking I've seen it somewhere, but I don't think I saw. You know what? I might have seen clips of it in Muppet Babies or something. But
you might well have, or maybe you saw a tape dispenser that disturbed you for life.
But so in a few years later, I had gotten into Star Trek, and I watched all the Star Trek movies. I rented all of them from Blockbuster, and that was that's the first time I remember like going a little crazy for something, you know, movie wise.
Yeah, especially if you're going to risk those late fees.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just impressed that I made it past the first movie to get to Wrath of Khan, because the first movie, when you're a kid, is
it's brutal.
I can appreciate it, but when you're a kid, it's like watching paint dry.
No, that's true.
I
still can't appreciate it.
I know it's a flawed film to be sure.
But, it's philosophical.
It's kind of let's just say like Wrath of Khan took it in a totally different direction, and you know, probably not Roddenberry's favorite direction, but it gave that thing a shot in the arm. But I remember telling my cousin how cool I thought the Star Trek movies were. And this is just how he is. He has to crap on whatever you like. And whatever you like, he knows something that's better, right? And that's just the way he always was. Like, you couldn't show him anything. So he goes, well, it's not as good as Star Wars. And I went, what? And I was like, oh, come on, it's got to be better than Star Wars, you know?
I saw it at camp. It wasn't impressive.
Yeah, I was kind of like, oh, whatever, dude. And he was like, no, it's not as good as Star Wars. And so I was like, and so I remember shortly afterward, one of my mom's friends got me the remastered Star Wars VHS box set. The one with the Darth Vader face, the Stormtrooper face.
Okay, yes, when they were re-release.
Yeah, when they were re-released. And I watched them and was blown away by them. And this time I was sitting down to focus on watching. I was a very hyper child, so, you know, that might have been one reason the movies didn't take at camp. But I remember sitting down watching them and telling my cousin later that he was right.
Bastard.
Tell your sister she was right.
Yes. Well, and tell my cousin he was right.
But no, although now it seems like a silly comparison because there's such
Oh yes, but I mean, children make those kind of comparisons.
Oh, and they both have star in the title, so
ridiculous
they must be
ease.
Well, remember the original title of Revenge was. Return of the Jedi was changed, wasn't it? Because of the concerns with
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It was Revenge of the Jedi was changed because it was supposed to be Vengeance of Khan.
Right.
And then I think they both wound up with better titles as a result.
Well, and I remember George Lucas, because the reason George Lucas gave was A Jedi Does Not Get Revenge, you know?
Yeah,
was his knee-jerk reaction to agreeing to... actually, it was his knee-jerk reaction to acquiescing.
Yeah, it's the spin he gave it, the creative spin.
But again, like I said, they both got a better title for that.
Yes, they did.
So moving forward, David, you've come down from the mountain.
Yes.
You have seen the light.
Yes, yes.
And the lightsaber.
So, yes, the lightsaber. I saw the incredible lightsaber battle between Darth Vader and Kenobi. Which at the time seemed cool, but now we see that it's rather restrained.
Yes,
right.
I have to tell you, it's kind of funny that you guys called me up for this, because over Thanksgiving break, my sister's boyfriend had never seen a Star Wars movie.
Wow. Yeah.
And so over Thanksgiving, I said, we're going to watch the original trilogy. And I brought him, and we watched the first movie. We watched the original version of it, and I remember he expressed profound disappointment with the lightsaber duel between Kenobi and Vader. He goes, I thought there was going to be more of that stuff, but you have one, and the guy just kind of gets cut down, and that's it.
Yes.
I said, don't worry, there's more. So, like, but, you know, he was like, I thought there would be more, like, lightsaber fighting, but there wasn't in this movie.
So, anyway, okay, so I'm all excited about Star Wars, right? And so in my neighborhood, we had, well, and Cole knows about these guys, the Harris twins. The Harris twins are a couple of guys who make movies. They make bad movies, but they, you know, they get their Super 8 out and they shoot movies. So they were planning on making a Star Wars sequel.
Ooh.
And yeah, and the plot basically was going to be like, at the time, and I kind of agreed with his interpretation, the rebels, they kicked the Empire's ass. The Death Star is gone. Darth Vader's on the run. It's over. You know, we just got to chase him down and find him, right? You know, put him in jail. Put him in Star Wars jail, you know?
This sounds like the premise to a J.J. Abrams film.
Hey, hey, hey.
So I wrote my own script. You know, I'm going to make a movie, too. You know, screw these guys. I can make a movie. And they had found out about my movie, my script, and so they apprehended me on the way home from school one day, you know. And basically shook me down and stole my script. You know, I was really pissed off.
Oh my gosh, this is like Hollywood.
I was going to say, this is kind
of... Well, it was in the shadow of Hollywood.
I was really pretty close to Hollywood, and I was very upset. So in reaction, I wrote another script, you know, and this time I put it in my shoe.
They never check it at the beach either. So you can
In my disappointment, they never shook me down again, so I didn't get to test that security.
They figured they had the goods, so you know, who would dare defy them and write a second script?
Right.
Well, you know, I love that because David regaled me with many a tale about these characters, and it's wonderful that that was part of it, because I think a lot of us who were aspiring filmmakers, as I was. I had an 8mm camera that my dad found around some relative's personal effects, and we were going to be making movies, you know. And my mom had read somewhere that all the ships in Star Wars were put together from various model kits. So we were kit bashing, and Eddie and I have talked about this before. And one of these days, we're finally going to do the episode where I get Steve on the show, and we do the episode Star Worlds Revisited. Because Steve was actually approached to write the screenplay for Star Worlds, because I was so enamored of Star Wars, and you know, they say the highest form of flattery is imitation, and pretty much my Star Worlds was a ripoff of Star Wars with some Star Trek thrown in,
and a dash of Battle Beyond the Stars.
Probably a tiny dash, because I really was not thrilled with Battle Beyond the Stars.
Star Crash.
Yeah, I actually never saw that one in the theater.
Movies all were made in reaction to Star Wars, which originally the movie executive was like, yeah, nobody likes science fiction anymore. Get lost, George. And all of a sudden, oh my God, we gotta make a Star
We need to get our Star Wars movie out. Yes, indeed.
It's funny how Hollywood works. Everybody thinks they've got the answer, you know.
Hey, yeah. It gave us Battlestar Galactica, at least.
That's true.
Well, that is true, yeah. I mean, you know, it put the old Dykstra Flex back in action.
So to bring up another story, so you would use Star Wars, because you were so into it, as a way to kind of make friends. So when I moved to Texas, I didn't know anybody. And there was a kid across the street, one of the locals, he'd been there for quite a while, so I see the kid and I'm like, you know, trying to talk to him, find something in common, right? So, what about Star Wars? And all of a sudden he's like, that's just a movie, you know, it's just a movie. I don't care. It's just like any other movie, you know. In retrospect, probably they were really religious family. His parents had probably indoctrinated him with that attitude, trying to protect him from, you know, let's not get too into anything else other than the Bible.
Yeah, a friend of mine's mom wouldn't let him watch Land of the Lost because she didn't want him to think dinosaurs and humans coexisted.
So there's a distrust of Hollywood in a lot of like the sort of boomer era middle America, you know, that generation. Like, a lot of them think Hollywood is like this amoral, depraved place, which they're not wrong. And, so they want to protect their kids from that influence, you know, like I think, because my parents definitely hate Hollywood, you know, that probably
I remember thinking as soon as he said he didn't about this stuff about Star Wars, I immediately in my mind checked him off. This guy's boring, you know, forget him. Yeah.
Welcome to the boring hick town.
When I met Cole, that's like one of the things we first started talking about, Star Wars. Like, oh, okay, Star Wars, yeah. So I can get along with this guy. Star Wars, sure. Yeah, we can talk about Star Wars.
But then you found out Cole was just a big fan of Ronald Reagan.
That's true.
Nice. I like that.
Then he started praising Ronald Reagan. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, here we go. One of those.
Like, wait a second. He's nerding out over a missile defense system.
Hey, we're going to show those Ruskies who's boss.
So have you seen War Games?
Yeah. Oh, nice! I've seen War Games. Yeah, that was one of the things, because finding a fellow Star Wars fan of any degree of beyond just casually being aware that it existed in Red Oak was very uncommon.
Yeah. In fact, me and Cole would just quote the movie to each other, you know? Just like start doing scenes.
Until we get another movie, we have to just to run lines.
I guess Oak Cliff was much more Star Wars friendly, because it's about every kid on my block was a Star Wars freak in my neighborhood. I guess I just lucked out. Oh, man.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about it is Dallas is much more urbane.
Yeah. The culture of Red Oak was, you know, nobody cared about Star Wars.
The FFA was, you know, if you weren't the Future Farmers of America, if you weren't a jock or raising a pig or something, you were...
Oh, my gosh.
They didn't have much use for you. So, you know, Hunter, how did, I guess, you know, once you really got hooked, did that change anything for you
as far
as, you know, your perceptions? And
well, and it, I couldn't have gotten into it at a better time, because, you know, it seemed like this is when the sort of, because when I got into it, you know, I started getting the toys, you know, I started, you know, playing the video games. I remember playing the Super Star Wars, Super Empire Strikes Back.
So you didn't see the movie until the 90s?
No, not until the 90s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was late to the party. And I remember thinking Shadows of the Empire was the greatest thing ever when that came out on N64. Because
I know. I think the video game to Shadows of the Empire was the best part of the Shadows of the Empire marketing thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Was the video game.
You know, and I was reading the books. You know, I read the Extended Universe books. Like, I read Shadows of the Empire. I read the one with the Sun Crusher. I can't remember the name.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
But I've kind of forgotten a lot of them. But I read a bunch of the Extended Universe ones.
Thank goodness, because now that none of that has even happened.
I know, it's all retcons.
Yes,
like,
yes.
I had the like guide to characters, the guide to vehicles, you know, those books that came out. So, like, you know, I was definitely bitten by the bug. I had the collectible card game, the customizable card.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Yeah. And which I did not understand at all.
No, like, it was a nearly impossible. It was not a quick learn.
No, it wasn't. My friends and I we tried to figure it out, but we couldn't. So we just kind of collected them, you know. We're just like, oh, I got Darth Vader, you know. But you know, then they started putting out the special editions, and I didn't really notice the stuff that was annoying about it at the time, like the stuff that kind of bothers me now. But you know, like Empire Strikes Back special edition is great. You know, I don't mind that one at all.
Yeah.
Like, when I showed my sister's boyfriend the movies, I showed him the special edition of Empire Strikes Back. So I was like, I'll watch that one, because it was just sort of like a remaster almost.
Yeah.
With just a few little extra tidbits, little gems thrown in. But, and he liked the first movie. He loved Empire, and he didn't think too much of Jedi, so. You know, and then I remember when Episode One came out and just how exciting it was that there was a new Star Wars movie.
Oh, yes. I went nuts for Episode One.
Oh, I know. I saw the trailer. I remember seeing the trailer in the theater. And that was when, because I remember I was hearing rumors about other Star Wars movies forever, you know. And when I saw that trailer in the theater, I was like, it's real. It's happening. You know, this exists.
Okay, well, let's backtrack a little bit then, going forward from Star Wars. Because that was in the ghastly days when, you know, especially like if you're like David and Eddie and I, if you saw it in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
then you had to wait 3 long years.
And if you wanted information about it, there was no internet.
There was
like, no.
To find an issue of Starlog or something, if they didn't have that.
Yeah, Starlog was one of your only resources back in those days, and they didn't, you know, they were by no means trying to be your be-all, end-all source for
And even when the first Star Wars came out, wouldn't it have been more of like Famous Monsters or something that you'd have to go
that
to?
That is true. In fact, I have on my wall in the studio, I've talked about before, the Star Wars Spectacular that was published by Forrest Ackerman as a little, you know, extra edition. And it had all of the little Ackermonster quips.
Yeah.
Below, captioning below all the pictures, like... one of my favorites that I can recall to this day is I think it was like the shot of Leia pointing her pistol, you know, head on at the camera. And, it was the stormtroopers coming for Leia, and it the quote was, "Run, Princess, run! He's got a galactic Gatling gun."
Oh no!
And yes, there was.
That should have been on one of the Topps trading cards.
Yes, indeed, it should have been. But that's the way things were back then.
I have a bit of trivia.
Ah.
One of the books, the first books that came out was published by Del Rey, Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Yeah,
I remember
about
that.
About 78.
That's a good book, one to bring up as an interim.
That book was, I read it as soon as it came out, snapped it right up, read it, because I go for the books more than toys, as Cole will tell you. I was always wanting to get the books or whatever. But anyway, the thing is that book, that story was actually a backup story that Lucas wanted to do if Star Wars had been kind of a flop, or maybe not so popular. Because Splinter of the Mind's Eye, the way it was written, it was going to be cheap to produce.
Interesting. I didn't know that about it. I remember because
it was like that, because back then the sequel was The Law of Diminishing Returns, right?
Right.
So you had to have that cheap story to follow.
It was like the Planet of the Apes series. Each movie came out made less than the previous one. You know, they kept making them. You know, they made five of them, right? You know,
right.
Planet of the Apes.
And each one of them, the last one, they were investing almost nothing into them.
Right. Right.
They're like, let's have a fight in school buses.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
The best one was when they had Starsky and Hutch on the TV show.
I remember that. But also, you know, Splinter of the Mind's Eye came out in a period where Star Wars was reaching the height of its powers in that period, because you had, like, everybody wanted a piece of Star Wars. And we've talked about this on the show before, where, you know, the sketch comedy show Pryor did a cantina sketch in the first episode of the short-lived series. There were dancing stormtroopers on Donnie and Marie show and all of these other things. So, you know, Splinter of the Mind's Eye comes out. We'd moved to Red Oak in about 1976. So when I remember in like grade school or junior high, whatever it was, sitting in the lunchroom reading Splinter of the Mind's Eye, and people like to come, "Hey, that's a sequel to Star Wars."
I like how you said that.
And it's like, no, it's not.
Yeah,
like, I will tell you why. Mm-hmm. It is because Han and Chewie aren't in this, so it can't be the sequel to Star Wars.
Yeah, that's just, true. They weren't.
And again, that ties into the whole idea of this was the backup. You know, save money by not hiring so many people.
Yeah, it focused on Leia and Luke. Yeah, they were the couple. They were like working together, and yeah. And then Vader makes an appearance at the end of the book. So yeah, you're right. It would have been cheaper to boost less actors. And
Cole, just to back up for a minute, living in Red Oak, were you allowed to watch the prior show?
Well, you know, it was in the comfort and security of our own home.
Ah, okay.
So you didn't, you could watch it. You just didn't talk about it the next day at school.
Yes, yes.
You never admitted. It was probably okay to admit you'd seen Donnie and Marie.
Okay.
Because that was, you know...
Even that was pushing it a little bit.
Yeah. Huh. But, you know...
You took that chance just to see the cantina scene, though.
Exactly. And then comes... Now, David, were you... Did your family arrive in Red Oak?
It was around...
About the time of Empire? Or was it...
Yeah, like a year later.
Okay. Yeah, so you weren't... part of the Empire frenzy that I talk about with us going to see movies we didn't want to see just to see the trailer because another friend had seen it. And it got worse by Jedi. You know, we had to go see something with This Way Comes.
Yes.
But let's talk about Hunter. I guess we pretty much know how you got to see Empire the first time because you saw all three of the first films simultaneously.
Yep.
And I also want to point out something about, like, you know, I was nearly 12 in the summer of 1977. We had heard about this Star Wars film, and I couldn't tell you how long it had been out when we did go see it.
Yeah. The movie stuck around a lot longer then, too.
Yeah.
In some ways, and in other ways, they didn't, because... I couldn't tell you what was going on with Star Wars as far as, you know, theaters in the Dallas area, but when Empire came out, there were very few theaters. That was back in the day when a new movie came out, and it was not at every movie theater.
Right, it was just at a few.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, my friend Steve, his dad would be damned if they're going to drive all the way to North Dallas to see this movie. And had to wait until it got... a little bit wider release, which
and they didn't have multiplexes either. So,
yeah, I remember it was a big deal to go like to the Aquarius, which had six screens.
Ooh, it's like the Mecca.
Yes, and then by the time that you know we were leaving Red Oak and the Redbird Mall was still something. I remember when it was really cool that they had their four screen movie theater. Was joined on the same property by a six-screen movie theater, giving them 10 screens between the two. So, you know, this is a time when you couldn't just go to any movie theater and see it. So for me, going to see Empire was a bit of a challenge. It had been out several weeks by the time I got to go see it.
Oh, wow.
Was that the case with you, David, or was Hollywood more forgiving?
I don't remember exactly. I'm like you. I don't remember exactly how long it was between the time it came out and the time I went to go see it. But I do know that my parents were interested in seeing it, you know. So we probably saw it within the first few weeks because, you know, my parents had seen Star Wars. They liked it, you know, not like crazy fans, but, yeah, they weren't against it. So, yeah, I saw it pretty much right away.
Yeah, but it's kind of always like to point out how much different it was back then. Because you couldn't just, you know, everything wasn't at your beck and call.
Oh, what was it? Did you ever hear the now defunct podcast, The Hollywood Saloon? Did you ever hear their episode on the video release history of Star Wars?
No, unfortunately, I never.
Oh, gosh, Cole, you got to listen to this. I mean, I'm sure you can find it on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Fans have kind of archived that show, but they like talk about all the different. They were like Super 8 reels you could buy that had like.
Oh yes, I wanted Super 8 reels in the world.
I had one of the Super 8s.
Yes, the Harris twins. The Harris twins had the Super 8s and would show them for a fee at their clubhouse. Yes,
Yes. I love it. I love it.
Isn't that illegal?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, but who was watching, you know? It was like having an unlicensed lemonade stand. It used to be you could get away with things as a kid. Now they would call the cops on you.
Yeah, the 70s, the gangster days, like you're getting your script stolen from you. And
yeah. Right. Hey, kid, come here. We got a movie over here. Come here.
I got the trench run from Star Wars on Super 8.
It's in my. This was where you had a little crank projector thing. You would put the cassette in with a little bit of film, and you would crank it from Kenner, and you could watch like about 60 seconds of Star Wars footage, and it was amazing.
Yes.
But yeah, that's interesting because I actually, in my collection, I have the very first. Our copy, my family's copy, the very first release of Star Wars on VHS. And it came in a plastic clamshell with a little, like, that kind of faded red and white. It almost looked like the kind of serial number thing you would see on a liquor bottle. But each one was serially numbered. And it was like a big deal. And this was back when, you know, a new VHS would come out. It would be like $80 or $100. And it would, it was ultimately, I think, Beverly Hills Cop that changed all that. That introduced the $20 VHS. Because they made so damn much money in the theater.
Yeah.
I never would imagine that would leave people dumbstruck.
We're just.
Actually, I was thunderstruck.
Oh, you're just impressed that I, you know, old man has all these memories he wants to share.
Hey, well, I remember.
Well, when I was a boy.
I think in my mind, I was trying to fact check real quick. Was it Beverly Hills Cop that was the first $20 release? Because in my mind, I was thinking, I thought it was something else. But
I thought it was Batman, wasn't it?
No, it was Beverly Hills Cop because they made quite a big deal about it at the time. Okay. Because the studio had made so damn much money, far beyond their expectations.
Well, they thought it was going to be the death of movies. They were like, nobody will buy it. I mean, everybody will buy it, and then nobody will go to the movies anymore or something.
Yeah, and then they tried to price you out of that market.
Yeah, they were like, so they made the videos like $100, you know.
And it was like, you know, you paid as much for Star Wars as you would pay for like a porno. And the porno VHS, I kid you not, there was like a little mom-and-pop place that was renting videos in DeSoto, and they had some pornos, and the boxes they came in were like cereal boxes.
They called them. I heard people refer to them as pizza boxes or something.
Yeah, they literally were. They were like buying a box of Cheerios, except there was porn inside.
It was crazy when Colleen and I went on our honeymoon. We stayed at this little cabin resort up in northern Georgia, and in the gift shop they had a little lovers section with like adult games and toys. And they had porn. They had a few pornos you could buy, and some of the pornos were in those cereal box size boxes. And I told Colleen, we have to buy one just because of the size of the box alone. But of course, it was a little bit pricey. So, and then again, like, what would we do with that?
You could put it on your mantle.
That's right. Proudly display it.
What would we do with it exactly? Once we actually got it. Is it going to be that much of a conversation piece?
Yes, depends on the title, you know? Because that was back in the days before they just did pornos that were named after movies.
I can't remember what the name of it was. Like, Numb Nuts from Nebraska or something. I don't know.
There goes our Nebraska audience.
All one of them.
Hey, they have no pride. It's okay.
But now... Well, the first time we saw Return, that was a very different experience. And Cole was there, I was there, Steve was there.
Yes,
we were ready. We were lined up. First day, first showing.
Yeah, Return of the Jedi was the turning point for me. Yeah. I was finally going to see a movie when it came out.
Yes.
And it was during finals week, too. So those of us who were exempt
Yes, we were exempt.
Yeah. But
now, Cole, yeah. David wasn't the guy who went over to the Walden Books to go buy
Actually,
he was.
Yes, he was. He was.
Oh, my gosh. He has talked that story up at least 4 or 5 times on this show.
I am the guy.
This one kid had the nerve to get out of line, go over to Redbird, went to B. Dalton or Walden Books. Yeah. He bought a copy, and we threatened him not to read it until after we saw the movie.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a pain of death kind of thing.
That story has become legendary on this show.
And I had forgotten about that until Cole reminded me about a week or two ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's been great about this is Dave and I are like reminding each other of all these things that, you know, and I keep thinking like I have like remember absolutely everything, and I discover no, I remember most everything, and there's some wonderful little things, but Star Wars was very much a part of like David and Steve and I. That was the bonding point, and there was just always something Star Wars going on.
I remember when we got that movie booklet that came out before. Remember that thing?
Oh, that's right.
We got it, and me and Steve and Cole, we opened it up, and we saw the first time we saw Java, and we all were like,
ah! I remember feeling at the time like, you know, Java shouldn't be this big slug. He's supposed to be like a, you know, dangerous gangster type. He should be the, you know, big and tough and mobile and
striped suit and
he needs to be the guy who can come and like just walk
He's
over.
He's Jimmy Cagney in Public Enemy.
Yeah, exactly.
He like takes a grapefruit and shoves it in Leia's face.
And then later, I got to thinking about that maybe Jabba is like the fittest of the Hutts. You know, he probably works out. And he's probably a pretty tough Hutt. As Hutts go,
that is a great image right there. I would love to see that reshot. With Leia and
that's right. With her in the bikini, but you can't market that anymore. But
right, yeah, that's wrong now.
Instead, he's a morbidly obese Italian man.
Right. So this brings up another funny story about first time seeing Return. So now Cole had a theory about Luke and Vader, you know, relationship, and I have my own theory.
Oh right. Yeah, there were some heated debates. On
was
this
it topic. That was it that that Jar Jar Binks was Darth Vader?
Not quite.
Or that Luke Skywalker is Kylo Ren? That was it, right?
So
we didn't know what it meant back then.
Yeah, the thing was, as we were so crazed with our theories that we actually started arguing right during the goddamn movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Steven had told us to shut up.
Oh my god, I forgot about that part.
Oh man, bad.
Yeah, in fact, my theory was that after Empire, I was certain that Vader was just casting about for anything that he could throw at Luke to turn him. You know, there had to be something he could do.
And then, you know, I was certain that during the scene where they're trying to get away and Luke, father, son, join me. You know, I thought that telepathic connection proved my point. But really, you know, I mean, just
the
theory.
The thing about it is, ultimately, the reason, not that I need to justify myself all these decades later, but, you know, I think that it played the way it did to me because even Lucas himself didn't know
for certain.
And, in fact, the whole idea of the Luke Vader father son thing apparently has you know, was sort of born out of fan suggestions.
Well, yes, all these years later I'll formally apologize to you, Cole. I should have you know, at that moment in the theater when it's revealed, I'm like, yeah, in your face.
Formally, this is your official apology to the rest of the audience.
Yes.
For us interrupting the film so that we could continue.
A little more humility there.
People were like, these MFers.
That's right.
Shut up. I'm trying to watch.
But at least we didn't pull a Homer and say anything outside the theater.
That's. I can't believe.
Oh,
that
my God.
That happened to me. At on Monday at school the next week, we hadn't seen it yet, and some of the high school guys were walking by us, and they're like, yeah, so Luke and Leia are brother and sister. And I was like, really? Come on.
The big pre-movie spoiler experience for me, and y'all will probably already know this with episode one, because this happened to a lot of people, was before the movie came out, I went and bought the soundtrack. Big mistake.
Yeah, yes.
I looked at the track list. Oh, Qui-Gon's funeral.
Right.
Oh,
the death.
Thank you.
Qui-Gon.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was always the doom of you should just take the discs out, pop them in, listen to the music. It probably isn't going to give away anything.
Well, right. And you think they would have learned their lesson, but they didn't, because with The Force Awakens, the track 18 is Kylo Ren is Luke Skywalker.
Oh, that's right. That I'm still wondering about that theory. You know, I personally I think that's just Disney casting about. I don't think that's going to be the case, but David and I will have an argument via Skype.
Yes.
In the theater.
We'll get on
just
the phone.
We want to relive that moment.
Yeah.
God damn your call, I told you I was right.
That's right. Yeah, that'd go over real well, since we're going to the Alamo Draft House for our screening. So with that, we do need to kind of wind things down a bit, as we're reaching our hour mark. And
all right.
Hunter was gracious enough to accept a last-minute plea to jump on board with this.
I was literally about to go to bed, and I was like, okay.
What? Podcast? Count me in.
Podcast? Okay. You got it.
And also, this is Hunter's way of seeking penance for being drunk when I was on the Star Wars episode of Midnight Movie Countdown.
That was years ago. That was like 6 years ago.
Wow.
I was actually telling somebody about that earlier today. I said, we did a Star Wars episode, but it was about everything but the movies. So, like, we talked about the comics and, you know, all that stuff. But the show went so long, and it was one of the few times I drank whiskey, and I got so effing hammered. I don't remember finishing.
And the irony was, that was supposed to be Stu's wheelhouse.
I know, because usually Stu is the one getting drunk on the show, which doesn't happen anymore. But this was in the infancy of our podcast.
That's right.
And it was like, anytime we were doing a show, it was time to drink and party, which made for some interesting listening. I think Stu got drunk when he did we did the racist Disney and Warner Brothers cartoons episode with Rick.
Oh, may well have. I mean, why wouldn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, I mean you kind of have to get into a certain place.
You have to get into a certain headspace to talk about.
Racist Disney cartoons?
Oh, yes. We'll direct you to the special that Rick.
I'm kidding.
What was it? Disney Goes to Hell or something like that?
Yeah, it was called Disney Goes to Hell.
And it was about all the...
It was Disney on Ice.
That's right, Disney on Ice, and then Warner Goes to Hell was the other one, because they did
Disney
the...
Disney on Ice Goes to Hell.
So, and now we're completely off topic from the Star Wars, but...
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah. David's obviously listened to several episodes.
Yeah.
Enough to figure that part out. But certainly, thank you both, David and Hunter, for joining us. David, it was great, because this is actually, David was the catalyst in a way for this episode and for an upcoming one. He's like, why don't you talk about the first time people saw Star Wars? Like, why have we not done that? I feel stupid that we haven't done this yet.
My impression now is, because I asked Cole, I didn't know, I asked Cole, hey, you guys.
Oh, yes, you're right. Yeah, you're like.
Suggestions, and he's like, Chewie, oh my God. Yeah, it's like, oh my God, really?
Yeah, please tell us, guide us.
Give us something.
Give us something we can hang our hat on. And in fact, this is going to be, literally, this is part one of a two-part the first time I ever saw Star Wars. As I said at the opening of the show, we're going to bring in a number of people of all different ages and do very brief interviews with little bumpers of Eddie and I, and just kind of put together a compilation of a lot of people's experience because I'm really fascinated by the fact that, like, Hunter discovers Star Wars once he has all of them and can binge watch them on home video.
Yeah.
Where some of us had to wait years.
And, you know, I would say try to seek out some people who didn't discover Star Wars, who the prequels were their first movie.
That's exactly what I'm hoping to find.
I've got the people on my list have.
Yeah, we've got a lot of that going on.
That's a fan base I don't think you hear from a lot. You usually hear from the disgruntled Star Wars fan who got into it early and then and hates George Lucas now and sings, "George Lucas raped my childhood on acoustic guitar on the street corner," you know?
Exactly. You would think so, but I have made it known several times on the show that I'm a huge fan of the prequels. And so I have people reach out to me all the time on social media.
I'm with you, you know?
Yeah,
no, and I think it's
right there with me. Yeah, and there's so many people that discovered it with Phantom Menace. You wouldn't believe it, but they're adults, people our age and slightly younger who discovered it with Phantom Menace.
Yeah, it was an easy thing to do because there was so much more presence, even if they were around in the 70s and 80s.
The reason I say that fan is most represented is because it's the Kevin Smith, like, wheelhouse of kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Like, pop culture narrative that surrounds Star Wars in the pop culture, but that sort of fan that Eddie's talking about is not as heard from, I think. I don't think their voice is as heard.
Oh, no, not nearly enough.
Well, we will be hearing from them as well. And with that, again, thank you to our guests. Thank you to Eddie for here we are. We're barreling up on 50 episodes of this, and we just...
Yeah, 100 if you count the live show.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we are getting near... Crazy. We're darn near 50 episodes of the live show, which is just incredible. And it has been quite a journey, and we love us some Star Wars, of course. And we will be back here again in 2 weeks with that compilation episode and more Simple Tricks and Nonsense.